Blog Talk Radio.
I'm not ashamed no more. I wanna do the thing that your love never did before, girl. Baby, let me be your candy liquor, girl. I just wanna be, I'm not ashamed. I wanna be your candy liquor, girl. Let me lick you up. Let me lick.
I wanna lick you, girl.
I wanna lick you in the morning. And if that's all right with you, baby, you know what? I wanna lick you in the evening. And if you really like the way I'm licking you, girl, you know what? I wanna lick you late at night. Give me a chance. All I'm trying to do is prove my love to you, baby. Oh, honey, I just wanna be your candy maker, girl. I wanna be, I'm begging you, I wanna be a candy little girl. Now I got something I wanna ask everybody. Do we have any Jodies in the house tonight? Come on, ladies. You don't have to be a man to be Jody now. Come on. You know what, honey? Your man ain't going down on you, girl. No. Because your man got too much pride. You know, it's funny. I used to be like that too, girl. And one day, my lady told me, Marvin, you better get your shit together, man. And girl, I started going down. And ever since that day, I told my baby this. I want to lift you up. I wanna lick you down, down, baby. I wanna lick you all around. Girl, let me lick you good, like your lover should. Like this. Can I lick, girl? I wanna lick you come. Can I make somebody come right now? Can I? Please. Let me lick you come, like your lover should. I wanna lick you. All you ladies that got those sorry ass men out there, the ones that don't want to go down, you better get rid of them motherfuckers. You know why? So you can feel good, girl. Like you should. Yeah, I used to be like that. Ashamed to go down. You know what I once said? I ain't putting that shit in my mouth. But I got hip, girl. Yeah, I told my baby this. You know what I told her? I'm your candy liquor. I'm your candy liquor. I wanna make you come. You know what I like about Jody? Jody won't sleep. No, no. Until he make you come. You know, some women are hard to come. But I like this about Jody. Jody will lick. Until he make you come. Jody won't move. Until he make you come. Jody won't smoke a cigarette. Until he make you come. You see, another thing I like about Jody, Jody don't get tired. No. Until he make you come. Can I make you come, baby? Yeah, you, come over here. Come here. You look like you ain't come in a long time. Let me make you come. You know what I want everybody to say? Everybody say, Jody will make you come. Come on. Everybody say, Jody will make you come. I'm your candy liquor. I'm your candy liquor. Candy liquor. I'm your candy liquor. Now, do we have any candy liquors in the house tonight? Come on, fellas, I know fucking well you go down. You don't want nobody to know it, but you go down. Yeah. You out with Mr. Jones' girl tonight, and you don't want nobody to know that you go down. I tell you what, dump the motherfucker, girl, he'll go down. Candy liquor. I'm your candy liquor. And I'm not ashamed. I'm your candy liquor. Woo! Y'all catch up to this. Bye. Bye.
every time I hear that song, it gives me a little chuckle. Good evening, everybody. This is Gail Delicious Johnson, and you're in tune to Delicious Talk. This evening is going to be a very, very interesting, tantalating, hot show. Okay. Also, I want to let us have a minute of silence for the tsunami and the earthquake that happened in Japan, and then we'll get on with the show, okay? Okay, that was a sad thing today. But like I said, we're going to have a good show this evening. I have my special guests, Master Jay, and my co-host, Rhea. Rhea, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm fantastic. You know, it's really a good day because I was sitting in my office getting ready to throw off all these complaints and all these issues that I have. And then I said, wait a minute. People are worse off than me because that tsunami and that earthquake was horrendous. Really, you know, really sad, all those people that lost their homes, their lives, and, you know, it's just a mess over there. So I don't have no complaints about nothing, okay?
No, that's right.
Yeah, and it's a good day today. It was nice weather here, beautiful day out, and I'm just loving life, you know, taking it one day at a time and counting my blessings. So with that being said, I'm going to bring on my guest this evening, Master Jay. Master Jay, are you there? I'm sorry, Master Jay. I didn't even give an introduction to you. Okay, this evening's show is about the mainstream culture concerning bondage, discipline, and sadomasochism. Most of the rhetoric sheds negative light on what many in this life choice considers their pleasurable and acceptable norm. In this segment, polydominant kink advocate and educator Mythos, AKS, Master J, will dispel urban legends and myths about BDSM. So everybody get your little seat belts on because we're getting ready to go for a ride with Master J. Are you there?
I sure am. Good evening to you. How are you?
How are you? I'm fantastic.
Good, good. And your co-host is Rhea.
Yeah, Rhea.
Yeah. Hey there, Rhea. Good evening to you.
Good evening.
First of all, I'd like to thank you all for having me on this evening. It's been a while, Delicious,
yes,
since we've been on together. But we always have a good time. And
yes,
I can't think of a better way of having a good time than starting off with a song like that.
Oh, yes, that was Marvin Cease, who passed away February the 8th. And I got the pleasure to see him at the arena here in Maryland at a blues show. And he sang that song. That's why I said I get a little tickled because I still see him singing it and, you know, making all those motions and, you know, stuff that went along with it. But, yeah he's gone. Yeah, he was definitely be missed.
Well, one thing we can say that the song definitely lives on. And I'm sure there are many people in the listening audience that will make sure that song continues to live on.
Yeah.
But again, I want to thank you for having me on this particular topic. There are many people, I'm sure, who are listening that are in different phases of their journey. You know, some people are what we call vanilla, or that is, they pretty much embrace a mainstream kind of Western civilization ideal as it pertains to their sexuality. You probably have some people that are listening that are bisexual or swingers or have made the life choice of BDSM. Some are newbies, some are veterans, but the main focus from my perspective is that what this this popular culture considers thinking is really no much more than a rearranging of prejudices. And I hope to, you know, kind of shed some light to dispel some myths, as you said in the intro, and to squash some urban legends concerning BDSM. And I think there's no better place to start than really defining what we're talking about in the first place. And before I do, let me just warn the listeners that may not be familiar, but this particular life choice is very acronym heavy. I mean, we have acronyms for everything, even the whole BDSM topic that we're discussing tonight. Each one of those letters actually means something to us. And so that's what we'll do for the newer listeners. And then, you know, we'll kind of talk about what it isn't. I think whenever we're dealing with misconceptions, the best thing to do after we get our working definition is kind of define what it isn't. So let's start initially with the B. The B, of course, stands for bondage. And what bondage is, it's self-explanatory. There are some people in this life choice that have kinks and fetishes that have to do with bondage in many different forms. And, of course, since this segment isn't on bondage itself, I won't go into the various intricacies of bondage, but it's bondage is a fetish or a kink wherein people like to be restrained or tied up by their choice of rope or leather or satin, whatever the case may be. It kind of really became popular in the public forum kind of post-World War II, where it actually became something bigger than what people kind of randomly did in their bedrooms. I would suspect that as long as people have been having sex and being sexual, probably Barney and Fred and Wilma and Betty and the Flintstones, they probably found something to tie each other with way back then. But I think the public expression of it, the documented history of all this, pretty much lends itself to the fact that kind of post-World War II, publicly expressing the whole kink and the fetish of bondage kind of surfaced post-World War II. Now, coupled with, this is important to kind of note, the D and the S in this acronym, they're kind of used interchangeably. So I'll start with one version of it initially. When we talk about the D being discipline, again, post-World War II, the emphasis of kind of the military regiments and the etiquettes and the protocols of military really influenced some of the earliest practitioners. And as a result, the kink and the fetish began to be more than kink and fetish of binding and restraining, to actually having order and structure. And it was manifested through discipline. Discipline regimens and rules as it pertains to protocols and etiquettes, and even some maybe corporal disciplines that we'll get into a little bit later. But the D also can stand for dominance, and the S for submission, which of course is also known as D and S. And again, your D, your dominant, who can be known as a top, or your submissive who can also be known as a bottom, usually have to do with the positions that those in a relationship dynamic or even in a sexual scenario consensually agree, you know, what role they're in. Both persons agree that one leads the dynamic or the play as a top or a dominant, and one agrees that one is a bottom or one is a submissive. And then probably the most overly sensationalized elements of the whole BDSM acronym are the sadomasochism. And the S can also stand for the sadist, and the M can stand for the masochist. Now, and again, this is where the over-sensationalism comes into play, because the sadist derives joy, pleasure, and satisfaction through the inflicting of consensual pain. And the masochist derives pleasure and satisfaction and bliss from receiving consensual pain. Now, what I don't want to confuse is, you know, for example, the masochist doesn't, you know, get into a car accident and jump out the car and start laughing and say, oh, I'm about to come, give me more. the masochist, you know, as a result of consenting to what their kink and their fetishes are, derive pleasure and satisfaction from that. And the sadist derives pleasure from providing the consensual pain. And those are the two components that are probably most overly sensationalized.
Okay. You mentioned the dominance.
Mm-hmm.
What does that have to do with a person being on the top and the bottom? You know, I thought maybe it was the submissive is, well, we're going to clear up some myths, so this may be a myth even. You know, being submissive was like when, say, you and your partner together and he tells you to do something as far as like, well, get over here and kiss my feet or lick my toes or something like that. Is that considered discipline as well, or... you know, is that submissiveness, or what's considered that?
Okay, that's a very good question. Well, submission or bottoming can really extend in several different, or manifest in several different ways. For example, there are some people who are bottoms as it pertains to play only.
Mm-hmm.
As it pertains to sex or play only, wherein they will consent to being secondary in the mm-hmm. in the play or the sexual exchange, but outside of the play or outside of the bedroom, they are, you know, pretty much alpha in their regular life, and even in that particular exchange with the other person, they can exhibit no other forms of submission other than it being limited to the encounter, the play, or the sex. There are those who embrace to consensual, not only submission, but slavery, in the sense where in a relationship dynamic, they have offered their service and their role and position as being an unequal in a particular relationship dynamic to someone who is their dominant or who is superior to them as it pertains to the relationship dynamic. So, yeah, it can be play and sex only, or it can be a real life 24/7 type of relationship dynamic where they consent to an inequality in the relationship dynamic.
Okay. So
So I was going to, basically talk about briefly what BDSM is not, because I think we were about to hit the same button at the same time. Since we're talking about misconceptions, the first thing, when you hear things like inequality or, you know, taking orders or being secondary or, you know, not being equal, the first red flags that come up in the minds of the naive is that there may be some kind of abuse or there may be some self-esteem issues. And so let's talk about what BDSM isn't. First of all, it isn't abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You might see people whose bodies appear to be modified as a result of some heavy kind of S&M activities. You may see certain postures or, you know, be aware of certain postures and attitudes as it pertains to relationship dynamic. But BDSM is not abuse, and the reason that it isn't abuse is because the major stress in BDSM is consent.
Right.
That, all adult parties are consenting to the play, the activity, and even the relationship dynamic, which, of course, is certainly nowhere near what abuse is. Secondly, it is not criminal assault. Now this is very important, because there are some states that have broadened their laws, because traditionally we know criminal assault to be an act of non-consensual violence against another with the intent to cause injury. That's kind of the traditional American version of what assault is, when there's a non-consensual act of violence against another person with the intent to cause injury. And of course, the type of play in BDSM, be it and maybe we'll talk a little later about the types of play, but some of the types of play that can modify the body, to the naive and to the unlearned, they could assume that it is assault. But certainly the act is consensual when it is consensual, and the objective of the top or the sadist is not to cause injury. But certain states are actually broadening the law to basically say any act of violence against another is considered assault. And they're ignoring the fact that the act could be consensual. They're calling, you know, if you spank someone and cause a bruise, that it's violence, even if you consent to it and that's your kink and that's something that you do. Also, BDSM isn't mental illness. You know, there's some school of thought that assumes because the practices and the activities are outside of the scope of what is considered traditional Western civ type sexual activity, that people must be off their rocker to participate in certain kinds of activities. But BDSM certainly isn't mental illness. BDSM also isn't a subculture for the deranged. Some vanilla people, some less kinky people think that BDSM is a subculture of weirdos who are into something satanic and demonic and all those other naive kinds of some kinds of other labels that they give. So those are the things, just, you know, on the surface brevity of it all, that BDSM isn't.
Right. Now, because I've always thought, because I'm not the type, well, getting this clarity of it, I've never been one who wanted to be submissive, you know, because I was on the phone one time trying it over the phone with this guy, and I didn't like the way he was, you know, because he was, you know, he was really hard, you know, and then he called me a B. I said, oh, no, that's it. That is it. So
yeah.
I basically, you know, I just couldn't see myself being submissive, you know, on the count because of, you know, how hard he was coming and, you know, the things he was saying. And I know that it can be a gentle side to it. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Being submissive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And let me address that, first of all, the fact that you, in your journey, have found that you're not submissive, that is absolutely okay for BDSM. It doesn't force anybody to be something that they're not. So the fact that you found that you weren't, that's okay. And, of course, there are many what we call styles. So there are different kind of styles of BDSM dynamic, and some are more sensual, some are more sadistic, and there's really no right or wrong as it pertains to style. It's just a matter of, you know, what works for the players involved. Now, in further dispelling some of the myths as to what BDSM isn't, and I kind of gave the preface in the beginning about how acronym heavy we are. There are some acronyms that kind of clear up the ambiguity as it pertains to, you know, this being this assault-ridden, dangerous kind of deranged, mentally ill world. And some of the acronyms kind of help clear that up. One of the first sets of acronyms is the acronym SSC, which was ultimately kind of created to dispel certain myths as the vanilla public began to, you know, discover this underground world and its practices. And SSC stands for Safe, Sane, and Consensual. And that was kind of used to answer the critics who were, you know, found this underground world and saw how unconventional and unorthodox some of the activities were that were different from traditional Western civilizations' sexuality. And so the acronyms SAFE, SANE, and CONSENSUAL were used to kind of put a tag on the thing that we do. In addition to SAFE, SANE, and CONSENSUAL, which of course means that what is being done from, you know, at the inception of this set of acronyms, safety was the first motivation, the fact that consenting parties are sane, and the fact, again, that it was consensual kind of drove it. But there was a little division within BDSM about the use of SSC, because there was a group that said, well, look, what we do isn't always safe. There is some danger and there is some edge to it all. And they came up with the acronyms RAC, which stand for Risk Aware Consensual Kink. And with those acronyms, you know, that this camp kind of believed that this fully conveyed the thing that we do, that everybody that does it needs to understand the risks and be aware of it, also to understand that everyone has to be in consent with their kink. And if something unfavorable occurs, you're the person who's responsible ultimately for the play that you decided to delve into. And then finally, the more obscurely used, which I prefer to espouse to, is prick, where we're talking more of a personally responsible, informed, consensual kink, wherein I'm not waiting for the bottom or the submissive to be responsible for the play, or the bottom isn't waiting for the top or the dominant to be responsible. Everyone takes their personal responsibility in the nature of the physical and the emotional aspects of BDSM. So I told you it was going to be acronym heavy.
Yeah, really, really it is.
Yeah.
Well, now the bondage.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've been bonded before,
mm-hmm.
and that was, you know, that was an experience that I could, you know, do again. So, what is it that you know, what do people really look for when they, you know, want to be bonded? What is it that they're, you know, getting out of that?
Okay, and I'll tell you what, I'll answer that, but I'm sure the I'm not online right now in the chat room, but I'm sure there are many people who whose kink is to be bound, as well as people who are probably listening that could, that can answer that as well. But again, you know, everybody within the realm of BDSM isn't into being bound. In fact, everyone into BDSM isn't into, you know, receiving pleasure from pain, or everyone in BDSM doesn't derive pleasure from giving pain. But those who enjoy being bound, that's their kink, and for some it's a sexual euphoria. For some people it's actually artistic. There's a whole realm of artistry within BDSM as it relates to the bondage. There are bondage models, bondage photographers, bondage artists, and there is a deep spiritual intricacy that the person doing the bondage and the person receiving the bondage actually connect. It's an extremely spiritual experience. And it's very artistic, and it can be as basic and as limited as kinky sex, where, you know, he comes home from work, snatches off his necktie, and ties up her hands, and, you know, they have kinky sex. So there's, again, there's no right and wrong. There's, you know, really basic kinky sex all the way up to a deep spiritual connection between two or more people that has such an artistic, you know, fantasy-driven component to it.
Now, people who, because now that I think about it, when he had, I think he had hog tie. I mean, I can't remember. It's been some years ago. But then he...
Oh, are you about to turn me on? Say that again.
I think he hog-tied me. I think he had my hands behind my back and tied them to my legs, I think. And then he spanked me with a leather belt. Now, in the beginning, when he first started, it was kind of like, I said, wait a minute, that hurts, you know. But then after a while, Well, he's you know, he didn't do it as hard, you know, because I told him, you know, it was hurting. So, you know, I had derived, you know, pleasure out of that, you know, because that was my first time, and, you know, he had asked me if it was okay. And at first I said to myself, I'm not into that, you know, but, you know, just trying something different, you know, it was, you know, it was pretty all right with me as long as I had it under my control, you know, to the point where he wasn't beating me, you know, and hurting me. Because when I said that first lick, it was like, chow. I said, oh, no, that hurt, you know. So, you know, he was a little less, you know, hitting me, you know, a little less harder. But it can be pleasurable, you know, like I said, if you have that control. But if you're with somebody and they hog tie you and the next thing you know they're beating the crap out of you, that, you know, that can be an experience that will turn a person off, you know.
I'll tell you what, Delicious, you broached something very important, and this is another misconception. The experience you just described wherein, you know, two people get together and before you know it, someone's being hog-tied and choked and spanked or flogged, you know, that is not what our community endorses. We have what we call negotiation. You know, if you and I were going to play, we would negotiate that, and we would discuss what your experience is, what your kink is, what your fantasy is, and most importantly, what your limits are. In other words, what you don't do, what you won't do, and what is a deal breaker for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also within the American context of BDSM, there's the insertion of a safe word. So as you just stated, if something is done or an area is broached that passes the level of your comfortability or your safety, you can use a safe word, and that safe word signals to the top or to the dominant that, you know, it's time to either change what is being done or to cease altogether.
Right, right. Because like I said, it was, you know, I think it was under my control, because when I had told him that, he immediately, you know, switched up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I really, and then I was feeling, you know, I said, man, I'm all hog tied up here, and if he just beats the crap out of me. But, you know, everything was good. You know, it was an experience that I wouldn't, you know, it's something that I would do again, you know, because, you know, everything turned out to be okay. So
yeah,
that's an experience that I'm not afraid to try again.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. But a little more about the submissive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like I said, I couldn't do that because that guy, he was just, oh, my God, the things he was saying was like, you know, when I answer the phone, I'm just saying to myself, is he crazy? He actually made me think that he was crazy, but it may not. I know it wasn't to him, because I guess that's what he does. You know, he said he was a dominant, dominant something. He said he was, and I said, well, I've never been submissive. So he said, well, let's do a little role play. But I didn't even like the role play, because when he called me a bitch, I said, oh no.
Yeah.
This is not going to work, you know, so I don't know if I could, you know, do that again, you know, but maybe someone else may be different from what he was.
Yeah, well let me also clear up that being a submissive doesn't also have as a moniker or have as monikers that you have to be called a bitch, a slut, or a whore. As a submissive, those can be hard limits. Those can be words that are hard limits for you. As you negotiate within your dynamic, you can say, you know, these are my kink, but if I'm called an N-word or a slut or whatever that you feel uncomfortable with, then it's a deal
right.
breaker. So
right, he just caught me off guard.
Yeah. Well, but mm-hmm. I tell you what, I wouldn't be at all surprised if, you know, there are submissives, male or female submissives, that are listening in that might want to give you their version of, you know, what being a submissive entails and what they get out of it.
Okay. If there's anybody in the chat room who's ever been submissive, please call in and share your story with us. The caller number is 646-652-2877. Okay, you got that? If you got a story to share, please call in. The call-in number is 646-652-2877.
And Delicious, I'm not online right now. What does the chat room look like tonight? Does it look like you got some activity in there tonight?
Yeah, no doubt. It's 15 people in the chat room. I'm going to make a shout-out to them. Angela, how you doing? Black Man 37, Dove Neo, Guest 24453, Guest 24603, Guest 25437, Jazz, Novella, Oasis 3000, Pain Drops, Penelope Flynn, hey, Raheem B. and Silky. Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming.
Well,
if you have any questions or anything, call in as well. Yes.
Delicious. I heard some familiar names that I heard on there as well, and I'd like to do something for somebody special tonight if I could. There's a great business owner and an asset to the BDSM community that has a website and a product line, naturaladornments.net. Mm-hmm. And maybe if we can get 11 callers to call, since it is the 11th caller, I'll have a special gift for them from naturaladornments.net. So if you get a chance to check that website out and all of the handmade expressions of this particular business owner, and practitioner in the community, I'm sure you would you'd certainly benefit greatly. But I want to personally give a gift for the 11th caller tonight.
Okay, you guys hear that? Call in. The 11th caller gets a gift. Let me see how many we got on the switchboard so far. Oh, I got 5 more callers got to call in.
All right.
You guys want a gift? Free gift from Master J. Please call in and you'll get that free gift. And if you don't call in, I'm going to take the gift.
Or if they don't call in, I'm sure I can keep the gift and give it to someone real close to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so getting back to the, let's work on the, we've covered the B to D. Let's work on the SATO.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And
let's talk about that, how a person can get pleasure out of inflicting pleasurable pain on another person and just exactly what type of pleasurable pain are they inflicting.
Okay. Yeah, that's certainly always a wonderful topic to talk about. The sadist, sadistic sexual self is evoked as a result of inflicting consensual pain, and there are categories of this sadism that can be employed during play. And let me mention from the onset, when we are referring to play, we're not always referring to penetrative sex in the play. Within BDSM, these acts of sadism and masochism can be done and publicly are often done without any penetrative sex. But of course, there's nothing wrong with incorporating penetrative sex or oral sex within sadism or masochism. But at this point, we're just answering your question on the different kinds of sadism. First of all, sadism doesn't always have to be physical. There can be mental sadism, wherein the top or the dominant inflicts a certain amount of pain emotionally as well as mentally to the bottom or the submissive or the slave. There can be various forms of impact that the sadist derives pleasure from. As you mentioned earlier, spankings can be given with the bare hand, with hair brushes, mm-hmm. with traditional belts, with handcrafted toys like paddles that are wooden, that are plastic, that are leather, canes, riding crops. You know, there can be more high impact play with boat oars.
You say and, boat oars?
Yeah, boat oars. And, you know, row, row, row your boat gently up the stream. Merrily, 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 that ass is but a dream. You know, it can, it can be, you know, whatever the impact is. But then there can be a little bit more what we call edgier play that the sadist derives pleasure from through asphyxiation, mm-hmm. which is in the category of breath play, choking. Clothespins, electricity with the infamous violet wand, hair pulling, fire, knife, hot wax. And so, yeah, there are many different things. But see, here's the important element, though. The sadist... you know, within BDSM, the sadist who derives this or experiences this euphoria from manifesting their kink or their sadism is only as good as there is a consensual bottom or masochist to experience and go on this journey, which again is a very spiritual and connecting journey. So yeah,
wow.
that's what the sadist some of the activities mm-hmm. that and of course this is just by no means exhaustive.
Well, we have a couple of hands raised up in the on the switchboard. I'm going to bring in caller 216. Are you there?
Hi.
Hi. You have a question or comment for Master Jay?
Oh no, actually, I was trying to win the guest.
Oh. No, you didn't. No.
Then I'm going to have to hang up. I'm going to have to hang up and try it again. You have a good night.
Thank you.
Okay.
Somebody must. 443, are you there?
Yes.
Do you have a question or comment for Master Jay?
I did. First, I wanted to say this is a really good show. I had a question. I think there was a mention of sensual BDSM, and I wanted to see if Master Jay could expound a little bit on some misconceptions about sensual BDSM.
Okay, well, thank you, caller 443. Yeah, we did, I kind of glossed over sensual BDSM. Well, sensual BDSM is BDSM that has what the adjective says. It has more of a sensual component. It may even have a romantic component. And it may even have a highly provocative and penetrative component with it. And there are some that would hear the term sensual BDSM and criticize it or condemn it because it may lack the impact, it may lack the sadism, and it may lack the masochism. And in fact, some of your sadists or even your hard bottoms might look at that and call it say it's not real BDSM, to say, you know, that the top or the dominant is soft, that the players that play sensually are not real players because of the sensual, romantic, penetrative sex involved. But again, within the whole scope of BDSM, one style is one style. You know, the whole emphasis really that drives this all outside of the play is really the core concepts of domination and submission or the master slave dynamic. So to answer your question, the fact that sensual players play sensually does not make them less legit within all that is BDSM. And I hope I answered your question properly.
I think she must have got disconnected or something, but we have another caller. 111, are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hey, Delicious.
Hi.
Hi, this is Jazz.
Hi, Jazz. You have a question or a comment?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I got kind of tickled when I was listening to you depict your, you know, what happened with your, you know, scene or whatever. I thought it was kind of funny and it kind of made me laugh. But I wanted to ask Mythos, and I could relate to it somewhat, but I do identify as a submissive woman. But I wanted to ask Mythos, you talked about some of the misconceptions and some of the myths. How do you propose, or do you have any suggestions on how we could, not necessarily police the community, but how do we break down some of these myths and misconceptions, and how do we politely police each other, and, you know, so we don't have such negative images of the BDSM community? You know, you kind of know where I'm going with this. I just wanted to know what were some of your thoughts about that, because you broke down some of the myths and misconceptions, but to take that even further, how do we begin to, you know, really break down some of those barriers and kind of politely police each other so that we can have a better BDSM community and it won't be so offensive to the general populace, so to speak? I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, that's a fantastic question, Jazz, and I think we're answering it right now because we're not in the dungeon. We're not in the private party. We're not on Collar Me or Fet Life where we're preaching to the choir. We're right now in a venue wherein people who have those very misconceptions can hear us, can hear our story, can hear that we do play safe, that we are intelligent, that we're not mentally ill, that, you know, we don't walk around with knives in our mouths and, you know, we do smile and laugh, and, you know, we do go to concerts and things of that nature. So I really think that it really begins with advocacy. And, you know, for me, being here is a sense of advocacy, wherein I'm able to tell our story without preaching to the choir. Because if I say it to a bunch of sadists and a bunch of masochists at a conference and a workshop, that's great. But to dispel misconceptions, though, you know, what we do and the things that we do, you know, at a certain point need to be spoken outside of our realm.
Okay.
I hope that answered at least a part of it.
Yes, and thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to continue with Master J. So everybody just hang in there, okay? Be right back. Right now, you can win that gift. Okay. So we're back. Rhea.
Yes.
Rhea, you've been very quiet, darling. Do you have any questions?
I am listening and learning and taking it all in.
So you don't have any questions?
No, actually, he's been very thorough in his explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he has.
What about any curiosities then, Rhea? You may not have any questions, but what about curiosities?
No, darling. No,
Jesus.
Okay, no. Seriously, in all seriousness,
yeah.
I don't think that's a realm that my curiosity will delve into because of my history more so than anything else.
Okay.
Certain things are automatically, oh, no.
Okay.
No.
I understand.
Okay, we have our 11th caller, 202-531-63. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call out your whole number, but 202. Let me bring this word. I'm sorry, hello, 202. Oh, they hung up. They, oh, yeah. 202-531, are you there?
Yes.
Hi,
yes.
You just won a gift.
Hi,
you just
I'm
won
Silky.
A, huh? Oh, this is Silky. Okay.
She won a
you
gift.
Just won, yeah, you just won. You just won a gift. So if you would.
Yeah, I know Silky.
Oh, okay.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good, thank
okay.
you. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well this evening.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Silky is our
11th
caller. Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, so
you know her. Yeah, you have a question or comment tonight, Silky, from what you've heard?
Okay, yeah, but I just happened to hear you just recently. Someone mentioned about some curiosities, and I've always been curious about fantasy rape. And
mm-hmm.
I've been told that if you have any type of interest in fantasy rape, then it's because you have issues that may have stemmed from you being abused as a child, which that did happen, but I don't agree that that's necessarily the truth. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Well, excuse me. I'm sorry. Silk, you said fantasy rape?
Rape, R-A-P-E.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I certainly can expound on that again. That particular category of kink, again, is that is certainly not what we consider traditional, conventional, kind of Western civ sex. So as a result, you know, anything that people are not acquainted with, they're not aware of, they're not, you know, privy to understanding, the easy out is to dismiss it as, you know, psychologically maladjusted behavior, to dismiss it as some form of playing out one's own pain. And that's certainly not true. Now, it can be true that, you know, trauma from the past can affect, you know, a lot that we do, vanilla or otherwise. So, no, I definitely don't say that, you know, because that is one's kink or one has a fantasy about that particular kink that implies by default they have some form of, you know, psychological maladjustment. It simply could be something that they want to explore. And, you know, as an adult, you know, we have the right, you know, to explore what we want to explore. That's my take on it.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. Okay. Someone in the chat room said, should blacks allow the same people who enslave them to be a judge over them?
Let's see. To be a judge over them. Ask them to expound over that. The same ones that enslave them to be a judge over them. Ask them to expand on that or call in, because I can't really get the gist of the question.
Okay, I'm quite sure they heard you. But, you know, like Master Jay said, call in, and I guess you guys can dispel that better.
Because
I'm not really
that,
understanding it.
Yeah, but while that topic is that, while that topic has come up, not only is the one of the dynamic categories dominant and submissive, there is also the category of master and slave. And for, you know, some people of different persuasions whose ethnic histories have slavery in it, they find it to be very offensive to refer to someone as their master, or to refer to themselves as a slave. But the reality is the difference between, for example, American slavery and the master-slave dynamic within BDSM is that, of course, within BDSM, it's consensual slavery, and it's certainly not kidnapping and the other forms of atrocity that were American slavery. So there's really not a comparison between the two from that point of view.
Okay. Did you understand that? I hope you understood that in the chat room who made that comment. Or, you know, if you have it, you can call in. The call-in number is 646-652-2877. Okay. Now, we want to get to the masochist.
Mm-hmm.
Or are we finished with the sado?
Yeah, yeah, we're finished with the sadism. The masochist.
Well, there's one more question in the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
It says,
yeah.
Do a sadist have to be a top/dominant/master?
Absolutely not. A sadist does not have to be a dominant. A sadist doesn't have to be a master or a top. You know, bottoms and submissives can also be sadists. So that is something that's kind of a misconception as well. So I appreciate that question. Dominants, masters, and tops don't have a monopoly over sadism. It is typically, traditional that the top or the dominant during a play session, since he or she is the provider, is providing the sadism. But no, the bottom and the sub can also be a sadist. In fact, there are some that are sadomasochists that are both sadists and masochists.
Hmm. Well, is there a difference between a dominant and a master?
Absolutely. Traditionally, the master is twofold. Among one's peers, particularly within, you know, the older leather guard and the old guard. One among his peers who has displayed a certain knowledge and skill set and ability to teach and ability to mentor, earned the title of master. Of course, in more contemporary times, self-identification has become more, has been more readily done, and so, people with really no skills, no knowledge and information kind of self-ID themselves as masters and dominants, and as a result, the waters get a bit muddy. Also, traditionally, those that have actually owned slaves, consensual slaves, are called by those that are under their ownership, master. So it can be master teacher, master leader within the community, and it can practically be master within a dynamic over slaves. And then you have, the dominant, which can be as basic as dominant traits and dominant personality constructs, and people who may have dominant characteristics come into the community, into the scene, and then they somehow self-ID
mm-hmm.
as dominants, wherein, there is a certain level of integrity, a certain level of honor, a certain level of knowledge, a certain level of care that one should have to not only self-ID as a dominant, but also, you know, be received as a dominant. Because, you know, it's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it certainly is humbling to, you know, have people in the community recognize you for, you know, a certain level of what you bring to the table, as it were, as it relates to being a dominant or a master.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. We was getting to the masochist. Now, I knew a young lady one time, and I didn't know about, you know, those particular acts during that particular time when this was happening to her. But she used to be into getting, you know, beat, you know, and I didn't know it was pleasurable to her, because at times she would, you know, have bruises and black eyes, and one time somebody found her unconscious. But what extreme is that, and why? How can you? What type of pleasure are they deriving out of being actually beaten to that degree?
Okay. Well, let me say initially that extremes never govern any rule. So, you know, for example, in the world of sports, when you look at Michael Jordan, for example, during his playing days, he was head and shoulders above the crowd, and it's simply unfair to the rest of, you know, the NBA to try to have every player live to the standard of Michael Jordan, because he's the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Now, within the world of masochists, you have a category of masochists that you're describing, if that's indeed what you're describing, as what are called hard bottoms. And, you know, the hard bottom, or within the close community, a pain slut, is one who has a high tolerance for pain, and that high tolerance, or the higher the tolerance is raised, or is heavy as the limit is pushed, the more pleasure that they derive from receiving it. Now, you have to be them in order to understand it, and to try to understand it. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with all things kinky or alternative, that if you can't understand it, and this seems to be the American way, if you can't understand it, it therefore becomes wrong. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that you don't have to understand it, because it's not you. But I think on the phone lines, if there are those masochists that ID as hard bottoms, they should, you know, allow them to kind of give their own take. If there's somebody on the phone line or someone that would like to speak on that, maybe they can speak.
Yeah, we do have a caller on the line. Caller 240, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You have a question or comment for Master J?
Hi, Master J. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you.
My question is not in reference to being beat. However, my question is, how does one become submissive?
Wow, a very interesting question, and I've always said it that submission, you know, is usually described, you know, two ways. Some that are submissive have described it as something being natural. They say that in their nature, as long as they can remember, they had submissive personality traits, They had submissive characteristics. Others say that it was by nurture, wherein, you know, they learned. You know, they saw other submissives in action. They read, they went to workshops and conferences, and they got in touch with another side that they were willing to explore, a journey, as it were, to go on. And then others say it's a blend of nature and nurture, wherein this very natural component of them was also able to coincide with a learning, and the nature and the nurture came together, and that became their journey. So, you know, I don't know if I could say how one becomes. I can just pretty much explain from my experience the journeys that I've been exposed to people who identify as submissive. Some speak of being born and having a natural submission, others having said they've learned, and then a third category say there's a blending of nature and nurture. And I hope I answered your question.
You did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Someone in the chat room said, can you also expound on that a dominant does not have to be a sadist nor submissive, a masochist, to have a BDSM dynamics?
Excellent. Yeah, these people are coming up with some good stuff, and they're right on point. Based on what your kind of scenario suggested, Delicious. A dominant certainly does not have to be a sadist. Mm-hmm. You know, a dominant, or the fact that one IDs as a dominant, speaks to one's leadership, one being a provider, a protector, one who has mastered himself and has disciplined himself first, and then has the capacity to, you know, lead a person or people from point A to point B, and that can be void of any form of sadism. So the concept of dominance is certainly, you know, a whole separate discussion and entity apart from sadism. And the same thing that the very wise person in the chat room said, a submissive's emphasis can be service. Can be service to a dominant or to a master without deriving any form of pleasure from receiving pain. So that is why the acronym BDSM, the D and the S are interchangeable, wherein the whole dynamic can be sadomasochism or discipline and sadomasochism, or it can simply be dominance and submission. They don't have to be one and the same.
Right. Someone else in the chat room put, a person can also submit and serve.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Oh, yeah, you got the hottest chat room. Maybe I have to come on Delicious Talk again as a listener. I haven't been on, I try to on Friday nights, I try to have somebody restrained or bound on Friday nights around this hour, so I can't usually get in.
Somebody put after that, well, you have to submit in order to serve.
Oh, yeah, they're getting real hot. They're going to make me reach in my pocket and give another gift out from Natural Adornments. They keep on with this good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, like the young lady had said, how do you become submissive? Well, I you know, like you said, it can be something that you grew up with or been around people who were submissive, or that may just be your nature. But Now, don't get me wrong, I am a submissive person, but not to the point of, you know, doing crazy things, having somebody to make me, have someone to try to make me do crazy things in a sexual setting is what I'm speaking of, because I'm not going to, you know, go but so far, because that's just my nature, you know,
well,
and I want to have a little control over it as well.
Well, Delicious, and I know you didn't, you know, mean any harm by this, and it's kind of probably a Freudian slip, but the fact that you even attached crazy things with submission, you know, again, for the submissive, what they consent to, you know, that's perfectly edifying to them, and a person who isn't submissive may look at those actions and activities and view them as being somewhat distorted or deranged. But as someone once said, you know, in order to know a person's story, you got to walk in their shoes. And it's kind of really hard if you're not them and your journey
right.
is their journey to really identify with the joy and the bliss and finding their place like they have.
Right. Well, I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, step on anybody's toes, but I'm just basically speaking, you know, because I'm new to this, and, you know, I have been bonded, and...
yeah, I know you didn't mean any offense.
right, you know, so if I offended anybody, I apologize. But, you know, this is, you know, this whole... show is very interesting, very enlightening, and very eye-opening to me, because I've had, you know, heard different things and, you know, people saying this and saying that about this, and, you know, then like I said about the young lady who, I guess she was enjoying, you know, the pleasure from being extremely beaten, and, you know, now finding out that it's not really like that. You know, because people have different degrees of, you know, receiving the pain and the pleasure, you know, like you had explained. But, you know, that's something that I may, you know, try one time as well, you know, because I don't have a high pain tolerance either. But, you know, it's just something that I would like to try just to see, you know, the pleasure that, you know, a person can get out of having pain inflicted on them in a sexual situation. You know, I've had my hair pulled, and I'm tender-headed to the bone. And that was a little pleasurable because, like I said, I had it in control. But, you know, if I'm somewhere and somebody's pulling my hair and hurting me, I might just turn around and punch them or whatever.
Yeah, well, let me make this point, because you do bring up another important point, and I don't want to, you know, put rose-colored glasses on this segment, because there are people who are abusers, there are people who are predators that do find their way to this realm like they do all other realms. So I'm not trying to say that, you know, we're going to give out the Nobel Peace Prize to people because they have this life choice. There are people, predators, abusers, who find their way here. But again, they find their way to children's playgrounds and to grocery stores and to mall parking lots and to Catholic churches. So abusers and predators find their way everywhere. But
right.
I did want to say that. And distortions that, you know, manifest themselves in this life choice that are all things abusers and predators. Again, they're not the standard nor the rule. They're the exception.
Right. Okay, we have another caller. Caller 443, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, you have a question or comment?
Yes.
Huh?
Okay. Yes, I did. In reference to service, from a non-BDSM standpoint, I've heard service leadership a number of times, and in that definition, it's been, you know, someone who is a leader that also serves those that they lead. And saying that, can you speak to some of the misconceptions about service being directed at one end of the dynamic as opposed to the other?
Yeah, I certainly can. Yeah, what the caller is referring to is when we typically talk about servants within this world, you automatically assume that it's in reference to the submissive. But there is a style of dominance or mastery that is a servant leadership. But what that doesn't mean, it doesn't mean that the servant dominant is a soft top. That's not what that means. It means a couple of things. It means that the servant dominant or the servant master is first of all concerned about the well-being of those under their charge first and foremost, even to the extent above their own desires. And that sounds really unconventional, and maybe even some of the callers here, that can even be new stuff for many of them, that, you know, there's some dominance, there's a style of dominance, there's a style of master who places places those that are under their charge above them. And the way they do that is that, number one, they're so in tune and aware spiritually that they're in touch with those that are under their charge. When they're submissives, body language and countenance and facial expressions and, you know, their whole connection to their submissives is such that they're able to employ a certain kind of leadership that grows them, that makes them better. Also, there's an empathy with the flaws. It's not a compromise when a submissive has flaws, but there's an empathy that I'm the type of leader that sees where you're weak. I empathize with that, and as your dominant, I can make you better. And then the power and the authority that they have over the submissive is not abusive. It's not brutal. It is not coercive to the point wherein it harms their self-esteem. If anything, it empowers them with dignity and self-esteem. And it also can be healing in the sense that this type of leading, you mentioned some things from the past life, some inner wounds from the past life. This type of servant leadership, you know, can have a deep empathy for the past life of those under their charge, and you know, can understand the fragility, and how frail, I should say, the emotional condition is, and try to make them better. All that under, you know, the concept that the dominant believes that his or her dominance is a stewardship, that, you know, they have to manage properly, that those under their charge, you know, they have to manage properly. They've been charged with this to make sure that those that are under their charge grow and develop and become the best that they can be. So, you know, that's kind of loosely, you know, what the caller kind of asked, and I appreciate that call. I like to talk about that. I you know, I very rarely hear that being talked about, particularly within, you know, BDSM among black people.
I'm sorry, I was just talking. I was on mute. I am so sorry. I apologize.
No, I just finished.
I apologize, but we're going to take a quick break,
okay,
and we'll be right back, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Step right up, hurry, hurry, before the show begins, my friend. Stand in line, get your tickets, I hope. You'll see that he is sad. He hurts so bad,
so bad, so bad.
See the girl who has lost the only love she ever had. There's got to be no sadder show to see.
Sideshow. And we have a question out of the chat room, Master J, or a comment. It says, can you dispel the myth about the shortage of black men in the lifestyle? It appears that there are many black dominants who prefer white women and that black women may ultimately need to consider poly relationships if they want to be in dynamic.
Whoa. Yeah, that is somebody really came to the rim really hard with trying to win a slam dunk contest. Yeah, well, the chat room is hot. That's all I can say. I wish I was logged on. But the question is for me to dispel the myth that there aren't many black dominants, and that I think that the person in the chat room is saying that there are not an equal proportion amount of black dominant men for black submissive women, because that there are many black men who seem to be seeking white submissive females, asking me to dispel that myth. I hope I'm communicating it properly. You know what? I don't know if I can dispel that, and I don't know if that is a myth. I think that there may be some truth to the fact that the number of black dominant men may appear to be disproportionate, because there are black dominant men that are more open to choosing outside of their race than black, you know, submissive women who are also equally open to being chosen outside of their race, if you hear what I'm saying. So I don't know if there is, you know, a myth to dispel. I think there could be an imbalance in the numbers, and I think if there is, I think that's probably why there are black dominants that they may not exclusively seek white submissive females, but they may be open to others outside of their race, where there is a category of black submissive females that say absolutely and unequivocally there is no option but a black male submissive. I mean, a black male dominant.
Okay, we have another call on the line. 111, are you there?
Yes. Delicious?
Yes.
Yes, I wanted to ask Mythos again. This is Jazz. What do you think about all the classes and the workshops and all the different, you know, places you can go for information to improve your style of whatever you want to call it? And I think a lot of people in the general populace don't know about some of these classes and workshops. I guess it's good from one aspect, but on the other hand, it can get really convoluted. So I just wanted to know what is your opinion on that with so much information out there. Is it kind of like overload, do you think?
Again, Jazz, I think that is an amazing question that you ask. First and foremost, I think, you know, whenever there's opportunity for education, it's a good thing. And it does two things. It shows that this world is not a bunch of cave dwellers that, you know, wield knives and canes and swords recklessly and with abandon, that there is a very refined element of, you know, intelligent people. These are intelligent people in this community. But there is an element of geekiness that can go on as well. I think that that there are some people, and that's their thing, and I applaud them for their thing. But as Jazz mentioned, whatever conference, whatever workshop, whatever, you know, convention, they're there. And It's information, 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 information. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're getting different schools of thought, different opinions, different perspectives, which can be good. But at the same time, if you're not practicing any of these things, you know, that can be a problem. And as you said, it can be convoluted. You can be in a perpetual state of gathering information. And what I say, you know, I know some of the great minds that I've interact with, both D types and S types. You know, I think that when you get a certain body of information, it's time to do something with it. And that thing you do with it should extend beyond your dynamic. It should be something that, you know, can make an impact for the legitimacy of the thing that we do. And I was mentioning to somebody the other day, Jazz, how, you know, I think it's a pity in certain cities, and I'm not trying to rhyme, but I think it's a pity that certain laws are being passed and it's shutting down the kink community, and you have people that don't even know that certain bills are in legislation, and secondly, aren't getting the word out to stop this stuff. So if you're doing all these conferences and workshops and conventions, but you're not practically conveying, you know, what it is that we do on a level other than getting this stuff intellectually in your head, you know, I think it can be convoluted. So that's just my take on it, Jazz.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have another caller. 443, are you there?
Nope.
443, are you there?
I'm here, but I wasn't asking a question.
Oh, okay. Okay. Someone in the chat room says some believe that white women are more submissive than black women, and that's why black men prefer them. I can believe that too, because black women were slaves by force and white women were slaves by choice. And they just seem that they have that submissiveness about them when it comes to men, and particularly black men.
Okay. How can I say this without causing a war? I think what the person in the chat room is dealing with is something more both sociological and socioeconomic. Quite frankly, because of, you mentioned slavery, because of, and I won't pull slavery all the way into it, but I'll just reference it and just put a pen there. But overall, black people have had a much harder road in America than white women or white people have had, because of course they have a 400-year head start on us. Because of that, there are certain socio factors that have affected black men, and as a result, if it affects black men who have typically and traditionally been the heads of our community, it's going to affect black women. That said, the translation, black women have had to suffer a lot of stuff at the hands of black men. Their road has been very hard, and a lot of it the black man is culpable for. When you look at the numbers in our community, a lot of black women have been left with babies that were created by men who don't want to take care of them. A lot of black women have been, in high numbers, have been cheated on and abused, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, the drug culture has run rampant in our community. And so a lot of black women have had to be mom and dad. they've had to be head and tail. And then a brother shows up and says, you know, submit just because I showed up. And mm-hmm. what she's not saying is that I'm not submissive. What she's saying is my journey has been such that I need to be convinced. You know, you just can't impress me by showing up packing, you know, 10 inches, beating on your chest with a voice like mine. No, I'm just kidding. And thinking somebody's about to submit to you. Her road and her experience has been different, wherein the white woman's road has been a lot different. You know, she's had, you know, 9 times out of 10, a mother and a father, 2-parent household. She's had a different socioeconomic background. She's had better schools. She wasn't reared in drug-infested neighborhoods. She's had an easier go at it, and as a result, life hasn't hardened her the same way it has hardened the black woman. And mm-hmm. so as a result, she has been an easier submit, as it were, to the black man. However, some of these sisters, some of the white sisters are now that, you know, this whole jungle fever type, you know, phenomenon has, you know, run its course a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, white women are finding out that, you know, they're now having to raise some mixed babies by themselves. They're having to experience, because of the social pressure of choosing the black man and being ostracized by the family, she's had to live in the projects in the drug-infested neighborhood now. And you're seeing a whole culture of white females who actually have similar personality constructs as it pertains to submission that some, not all, but some black women have, because of their own introduction to the hard-knock life. But, you know, that's just my take on it. And I'm not saying that this is true about every black woman and every white woman, but I do think that that does address the phenomenon.
Right. Okay, we have another caller. 216, are you there?
Hi, yes, I'm here. This is Minx. How you doing?
I'm okay. You have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have a comment. Mythos, I just wanted to say thank you for pointing out that 400-year head start and also bringing up the socio-economical backgrounds that many of us grew up in and how that translates into what we were basically spending our time on while maybe other races or cultures were busy exploring themselves and their sexuality. So I just wanted to give them props on that. That was really, really cool.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I hope I did address that sufficiently, because I really think that the whole black woman not being as submissive as the white woman needs to be really qualified with all of the information in the discussion, as you just said, the 400-year head start, and the freedom to explore, you know, kink, education, you know, fitness, health, and the whole nine yards, self-esteem. You know,
exactly.
when you're free, you can explore a whole lot, can't you?
Exactly. Instead of being forced to raise the children, worry about food, take care of your man, try to keep his pride and self-esteem going, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it was slanted like that. So props, big props. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. That was very interesting, very enlightening answer. I appreciate that. Now, I think I heard someone say something about classes. Learning about BDSM? Are there classes or meeting places or, you know, for people to get involved like that?
Yes. Yeah. Things have changed really dramatically over the years from my initial introduction up until now. You know, you at one time you had to know somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody to even get an invite to
wow.
certain things.
Right.
But again, things evolve, and we have mass media and blog talk radio and websites and things of that nature. And all things kinky have become a little more mainstream in pop culture than they were. And I think depending on who you talk to, that can be a good thing or a not so good thing. But to answer your question, yes, there are different tiers of meeting types, you know, things that can give just surface, superficial kinds of introductions to the people and the kind of discussions that people in BDSM have, to more, as Jazz said, more formal education. There are conferences, there are workshops. In fact, depending on what city you're in, you know, it would be, if your city's big enough, you know, there would be no doubt at least something to go to almost weekly wherein you could learn. There are national conventions. There are national workshops. There are seminars on a local level that, you know, specialize in some of everything, including the acronyms that we introduced. I mean, you can go to bondage workshops, and there are workshops and seminars for submissives and slaves and masters and dominants and the whole gamut. So, again, safety and skill is very, very stressed within BDSM, and there are organizers and presenters that make sure that they do their part in order to get the information out that they've been, you know, fortunate enough to obtain.
What culture dominates the BDSM?
Clearly, clearly, as in most things that are considered kinky, an alternative, white people, which are, you know, composed a major portion of the population, they certainly have, you know, have the numbers, and, you know, it would be a whole different segment to explore why. But, you know, my short answer is that they seem to dominate the numbers, but there is a growing number of minorities of all different ethnic persuasions that have been here, are raising their hand and showing that they're here, and many more that are entering.
Oh, okay. Well, we have 1 minute left, and I'd like to thank everybody who came out in the chat room. Thank you, Master Jay. We're going to definitely have you back on again to do another show. Excuse me, and, you know, wish everybody a nice weekend. Rhea?
Yes.
You have any closing remarks real quick?
Very informative, extremely enlightening.
Yes, very, very, very good. And, oh, my next week's show is going to be Happy Hour, so I'm going to be playing music from the late 50s up into the day. It's going to be at 10 o'clock. I think that starts at 10. That's next Friday. And be checking my show page for my upcoming shows. And like I said, Master Jay, I would like to have you back on again so we can do another show. And with that being said, everybody have a good night, and thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.